Hi, it's Karen Webster, and welcome to The Matchmaker is In. Today, I'm delighted to be joined by Jonathan Rosenthal, who is the co-founder of Warehouse Exchange. Jonathan, thanks for joining me today.
Well, thank you for having me. It's an interesting topic that you've picked, and I'm delighted to be involved.
So let's get right into it. First, by providing our listeners with an overview of what Warehouse Exchange is all about. So it is an automated marketplace that matches buyers and sellers of warehouse space in real time and actually gets the deal done. So handles the process from beginning to end. I'm going to ask you the first question with a little bit of context. You've described Warehouse Exchange as the outlaw out to set the system right. I love talking to outlaws. So tell me, what was so broken?
Well, the way that people book and buy and sell warehouse space and what we call value-added services is antiquated. It is a system where primarily people use salesmen banging on doors, trying to find users of warehouse space, and they try to enter into long-term contracts. And that is completely antithetical to what is going on in the marketplace, where manufacturers and distributors really want a lot of flexibility. They need agility. They're outsourcing as much as they can. They don't want to be locked into long-term contracts. They don't want to be locked into infrastructure, racking equipment, sorting equipment, forklifts, all the things that come with warehousing. And this provides a real platform, a real exchange for interim space, short-term space, long-term space. It allows the customer to fashion what they want, and it allows the marketplace to be the great arbiter of value.
So it sounds like you're not only changing the process, but also reimagining the entire buying and selling of warehouse space from soup to nuts.
That's correct. That's correct, and it needs to be reimagined because it's a system that is being impacted by externalities. And let's back up a little bit. My entire career has been focusing on industries that are going through rapid transformation as a result of some externality. There's something happening in the marketplace. It could be environmental. It could be regulatory. It could be technology. Something is going on that is causing an industry to be rapidly disrupted and allowing entrepreneurs and people who are not legacy thinkers to intervene in the process and take advantage of that that metamorphosis of an industry. When you can find an industry like that that is rapidly innovating, but at the same time is populated by participants that are slow to adopt. Now, they may be slow to adopt because they're culturally slow to adopt, or it may be because they have so much embedded infrastructure, it's hard for them to shed the costs. This is the perfect industry. The warehouse business is the perfect industry to disrupt in that way. You have legacy thinkers in part because, you know, just the nature of the industry, that people are slow to react, and it's a long-term commitment, and you've got a lot of infrastructure and technology that's embedded in the system. So yes, it is a reimagining of how people do things. It is Airbnb of the warehouse business.
So whenever you're disrupting legacy anything, even though there's a need, it's very hard because there is all of the, as you described it, entrenched way of thinking, entrenched systems, and technologies. So thinking back to how you got started and designed your platform, where did you start? Did you start on the supply side by trying to aggregate supply, or on the buyer side where perhaps they were ready for something new, but of course you need both at roughly the same time? That's the challenge in getting these things going. But where did you actually start?
We started on the supply side, and you're 100% right that it is a very difficult ballet in the creation of any marketplace, where you have to create You have to create capacity, and at the same time, you have to create demand. So we started on the capacity side because that's something we know well. I have been in the warehouse business for some time. We actually manage our own third-party logistics providers. We have about 2 million square feet of our own space. We provide lots of value-added services. At any given time, we probably have 300 to 500 employees in that space. So so we understand that space, and it was, I must say, it was a relatively easy sell to the supply side, because what you're saying to people on the supply side is, look, you don't, it doesn't cost you anything to sign up, and all you're doing is providing the system on an automated basis. You're providing the system with what capacity you're willing to offer to the marketplace, and we provide an automated system for a buyer to interact with you, and we let the marketplace have a dynamic interaction between buyer and seller to establish the parameters of whatever contract you want to enter into. So from the warehouse, I mean, let's just define the space here. In the United States, there's 14.5 billion square feet of warehouse space. On any given day, there's about 4.5 billion square feet that's empty. That's an enormous inefficiency. The entire ecosystem, the entire freight ecosystem, is incredibly inefficient. That runs the gamut from trucking, that, you know, operates, how many trucks are pulling a container in one direction and then not in the other, you know, running empty. How many ships are running at 70% capacity when in fact they don't break even until they're well into the 90s. So the entire ecosystem of moving stuff from one place to another is a very, very inefficient system. And technology is going to change that. It did it in the airline business. It's done it in utilities. It's done it in a lot of other areas. And it's going to do it in the freight ecosystem. So that's my focus. My focus is on the freight ecosystem, with the warehouse business clearly being the low-hanging fruit, because you've got so much cost associated. I mean, think about that, 14.5 billion square feet. Every one of those warehouses has racking equipment. It has forklifts. It has sorting equipment. It has computer systems. It has warehouse management systems. It's a very complex system, yet almost 30% of it here in the U.S. and about 50% in Asia is empty.
That is stunning. Is there a particular profile of warehouse that represents this third of the space that's empty, or is a warehouse a warehouse a warehouse, and anyone can put any? I mean, obviously, if things need to be refrigerated, that's one thing. But setting that aside, can any warehouse serve any purpose?
Well, I think the marketplace is the arbiter of whether the particular warehouse is appropriate for a particular user. You know, there's nothing magic about a warehouse. Some people need a little bit more technology than others. Some people need some levels of automation. Some people need clear span that's much higher than others. But basically, it's a big box, and you fill it with whatever kind of technology you want. But, you know, when you think about, so you're scratching your head and you're saying, wow, a third of the space in the U.S. is empty on any given day. That seems crazy. Well, it's really not, because if you think about it, if you're a manufacturer, you don't have a steady state. You have ebbs and flows of demand. So if you're Mattel, of course, you know, coming up in Q3, Q4 before Christmas, you have a lot of demand. You have a real need for space, and you need to put that inventory someplace before it gets shipped out to your customer. So in Q3, you might need 400,000 square feet of space. But right after Christmas, in the first quarter of the next year, you might only need 200,000 square feet of space. So the system is fundamentally flawed in that warehouses and warehouse equipment and employees are relatively static. What do you do when you rent a warehouse and you've got a 5-year lease and you've purchased millions of dollars of equipment? You can't say to the landlord, hey, I only want to pay you rent for half the space, you know, in my down month, and then I'll pay you a full price for the space. No, you can't do that. You have to, you're in a steady state. So the industry is fundamentally designed for an entirely different world.
Mm-hmm.
Right now, if you think about the Amazons of the world and other, you know, the way distribution is changing, people want things right now. They want them where they want them, and they want it for free.
Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm. So you really are the Airbnb of warehouse space then. So you're enabling, to take your example, a Mattel to put that amount of space on the market for a particular period of time, for someone who may only need it for a particular period of time that matches one of their peak cycles in a Mattel's down cycle.
That is right. And if you think about the model today, if you were a warehouse, let's say you're one of our warehouses tend to be fairly big boxes. They might be 500,000 square feet. This is the size of several football fields. We may have 4 million SKUs in one building. So if you're a small manufacturer and you need, let's call it 300 or 400 or 500 pallet positions, and you only need it for 4 months, if you were to call the CEO of our warehouse and you said that that's what you were looking for, he'd never return your phone call. He can't make enough money on that interaction, because he's used to a much longer commitment. He wants a 5-year commitment. He wants a commitment on how much upfront capital you're going to put for automation equipment. And it's just a fundamentally flawed system. Now, if you're out there and you want to lease a 5-year, you want to lease an entire warehouse for 5 years, you're probably not going to come to our exchange. You're probably going to go to a realtor, a CBRE, or a Jones Lang LaSalle, and you're going to go through the traditional process of trying to find a warehouse that's compatible with your needs. But anything other than that, today I would suggest that market just doesn't exist. Mm-hmm. So you have this schism between a manufacturer who keeps their inventory in the back of their manufacturing facility that might have 1,000 or 2,000 square feet. They don't have enough to develop a relationship with a third-party logistics provider or to rent their own warehouse. So now what do they do? And I don't know what they do. I mean, they may go to public storage. They may keep stuff in the garage of their house.
Mm-hmm.
But this country is built on small business. And so
right.
You have this disconnect between the need of small and mid-sized companies for agility and an industry which is fundamentally designed in opposite of agility.
Mm-hmm. So does the Mattel arrangement with the warehouse allow them to sublease? Are there contractual problems with actually putting that space out on the market?
Well, when you're working with a third-party logistics provider, and this is I'm generalizing, because you know there are tens of thousands of contracts and tens of thousands of buyers and sellers, so I'm sure everyone has their own deal, and I'd be loath to tell you what every deal was, but when you're contracting, you're really contracting for capacity. You're not, when someone contracts with us, they're not contracting for a specific space as you would in an apartment building,
mm-hmm.
where you're renting unit number 4. You're not contracting for aisle number 17 in a warehouse. You're contracting for a service, and that service is the ability to take in inventory, to store that inventory, to do something with the inventory, and this is an important feature. When you do something with the inventory, you might be repackaging that. You might be taking, a box of 100 pairs of socks and breaking them into 3 pairs in a poly bag. You might be putting labels on shirts. So there are lots of things that you could do. We call that those value-added services. So the answer is that, no, you make a commitment. If I make a commitment to you as a 3PL, I'm not going to do it purely on a seasonal basis, because what am I going to do with my space when you're not there?
Got it. So we talked about the supply side. Tell me how you actually got the buy side on board.
Well, the buy side is somewhat organic. That is, you know, if you offer it, they will come, because people are forced to buy something they really don't want. So it's like walking into a supermarket and saying, you know, I want to buy three bananas. And they say, well, we don't sell three bananas. We only sell a case of bananas. Mm-hmm. Well, right now, you don't have the option of buying three bananas, so you're desperate. You really want the bananas, so you buy the whole case. Well, how many people walk out of the store and say, well, I don't want a whole case, so I'm not going to buy any bananas. Mm-hmm. I only want three bananas. So the real question, and something that we haven't solved yet, frankly, is how many people are out there that would use warehouse services, but they only want three bananas, and nobody offers three bananas?
So that kind of brings me to the next set of questions, because it sounds like there's the great opportunity on the buy side. It sounds like there's interest on the supply side to accommodate, thus your platform. What, though, do suppliers or buyers feel they may be giving up by opting into your exchange versus the traditional system today? Are there trade-offs?
You know, I'm sure there are, and I will tell you the trade-off that we hear in the marketplace, which I don't believe, and this is pure legacy think. We hear in the marketplace, you know, this is a personal decision. You have to have a personal relationship with your warehouseman. You really have to know who you're dealing with. You know, yes, they have insurance, and yes, they could have reviews online, and yes, we could have all kinds of ways of making sure that the warehouseman is reputable and is not going to damage your goods or steal your goods or something like that. But we hear so much that, you know, it's a personal sale. You have to have this. Well, that's just silliness. If someone would have told me, you know, 5 years ago, would you like to rent your back bedroom to somebody you never met before? You know, I would have thought long and hard about that. You know, waking up in the morning and having somebody walk out in their bathrobe in my kitchen. But Airbnb did $6 billion last year.
I don't
buy the legacy think. I mean, the very nature of disruption, by definition, is that you're taking ways of thinking, you're taking patterns of thought that have been embedded in a culture or embedded in an industry, and you're disrupting that way of thinking.
So, Jonathan, let me ask you a question about that. So does your platform do anything to put that issue off to the side? So do you have ratings or any sort of vetting or ranking that gives those buyers the ability to say, this is not only what I'm looking for, but out of 5 stars, it gets a 4.5 or whatever the qualifying criteria may be?
So that is a cornerstone of the exchange. If you have a bad experience with the exchange, you're never going to come back. You're never going to use it. So a cornerstone of the exchange is that we're going to provide, or we provide for you, a much better, much more thorough, much more rigorous, third-party vetted process for you to understand that you're taking your inventory and you're placing it in the hands of someone else. That's a pretty big decision, and that's a pretty critical decision. So we have to be very sure We offer insurance that no one else might offer. We offer reviews from third parties. We offer all kinds of ways that you can get comfortable, but you hit the nail on the head. I mean, we have to demonstrate that when you are taking your inventory, which could be your year's supply, you know, many of these manufacturers, if their inventory was to be lost or damaged, they could go out of business. They can't service their customer. So we have to really vet. And again, it's a marketplace. So there will be certain suppliers who only have certain levels of insurance. And there may be certain buyers who only need those levels of insurance. If they need additional insurance, all they have to do is press a button. Mm-hmm, and they get additional insurance from us. Mm-hmm. So again, I'm a believer in a marketplace. I'm a believer that you put people together, you provide as much information as you possibly can, much more than they might be able to obtain on their own, and you let those buyers and sellers be the arbiters of value.
So let's talk a little bit about that process. So what happens? Buyer goes to your site, sees something, decides to make an offer. What then happens?
Well, it's a little bit more complicated than that. So you go to the website, the Warehouse Exchange website. You input essentially a filter. You say, here are all the things that I need. And then it goes out and it looks at the capacity in the marketplace and what's available, and it comes back and says, here are your best three choices. Now, in addition to that, we have the we have a partnership with IBM Watson. So this is a Watson-powered system. And using artificial intelligence, we can look at the capacity of the marketplace and we can say, you know, you put in the system that you needed, you know, you needed space in Santa Monica, and here is the three best choices given the parameters that you've asked for. Here are the three best choices in Santa Monica, but we'd also like to tell you that if you wanted to save 30%, you could go over to Culver City, because Culver City happens to have a lot of capacity. So using artificial intelligence, we can begin to create much more efficient marketplaces.
Mm-hmm. Okay, so I've decided I want to go to Culver City. I've picked up my spot. Now what?
Well, now it's just a question of you know, having a handshake, a technical handshake online. It's a digital handshake between buyer and seller. So you've now if you now say yes, okay, I'm interested in Culver City, and then provide those opportunities. You look at those profiles. You can look at reviews. You can actually look at videos and look at pictures of the warehouse itself. You can see exactly what you're getting into. You can look at the contractual relationship that you're developing, and you negotiate a price on a dynamic basis. So the buyer may say, you know, our price is, you know, $20 a pallet position, and you might say, well, I'm willing to pay you $18. So again, the technology allows for a very dynamic, both dynamic pricing model and dynamic demand model.
And does the platform create the contract? I mean, how far do you go online? I mean, including how is money exchanged?
Well, the money is exchanged through, you know, the same kinds of systems that you have on many platforms. So it's done on an automated basis. You're not billing. It is an automated billing process, but the contracts are developed by the exchange, so you can use the existing you actually use the existing contracts on the exchange.
Got it. How do you make money?
It's pure transaction driven. It is a fee based on the transaction. So we want the marketplace to reach its own equilibrium. We don't want to set pricing. We want buyers and sellers to come together. I mean, okay, here's the question. We've asked many suppliers this. If you had excess space and somebody came to you at the last minute and said, you know, I'd like to rent some of your space. I need some pallet positions and I need it for 4 or 5 months. Would you charge more or would you charge less than your normal market rate? It's interesting. We found that about 50% of the capacity that we've talked to says I'd charge more because you're coming to me at the last minute. You're obviously desperate. I've got excess space, you know, so I'm going to get a premium. And because you only want it for short term, I'm going to charge you a premium. It's very interesting because about half the marketplace says, oh, no, I've already been paid for that space or I already have it sitting there. It's a perishable product. If I don't rent it to you, it's just going to go away. I'm not going to make anything. So I would charge you less. So very interesting. So why should I, as the exchange, why should I be the arbiter of that value? Why wouldn't I let buyers and sellers decide on who's right, whether that space should be cheaper or more expensive? It really ought to be up to the buyers and the sellers. So we are a transaction-based model, and you just you pay a fee for conducting a transaction.
How do you decide where you're aggregating buyers and sellers geographically? I mean, marketplaces can take on a bunch of different dimensions. They can either specialize in a particular product that goes everywhere, you know, kind of broad and not so deep, or very deep and not so broad. What is your approach to expanding the platform?
This is actually a relatively simple question because 42% of all imports in the U.S. come through Southern California. They come through the L.A. and Long Beach Harbor.
Yep.
So we chose to, there's 1.8 billion square feet of warehouse space just in the Southern California area. So we chose to start in those areas where there's a concentration of demand. So we know that Los Angeles, Chicago, New York, New Jersey, that's really where there's heavy demand. Now, ultimately, we think that the exchange will really provide a service for people who are trying to access warehouse space in Ohio, where they have no ability. You know, it might be a manufacturer based in Shanghai, and they need space for 6 months in Ohio. How in the world do they access that space? They have no ability today.
It sounds like you can also be a partner in helping to establish some of these, you know, logistical centers, particularly given your background, as e-commerce and cross-border commerce, you know, really become such a vital part of how goods and services need to be shipped and then dispatched to wherever the end point is, whether that's a consumer's home or someplace in between.
Yeah, I would argue that it has always been an incredibly important and essential piece of commerce. There were disruptions in the system, and I would suggest that, for example, containerization, which didn't occur until 1963, completely disrupted how things were manufactured, where they were manufactured, what kinds of labor was used, what kinds of raw materials were used. Containerization really changed the world, and I think that that the warehouse exchange will similarly change the world, because now you can get space and you can get value-added services wherever you want, whenever you want, for as long as you want.
Well, Jonathan, that sounds like a great way to wrap. This was a fascinating conversation. I really enjoyed getting to know you and your business, and I'm sure everyone listening did as well. Thanks so much for your time today.
Thank you. I look forward to talking to you in the future.
Thank you. I do as well. Thank you, and goodbye, everyone.